You're listening to Getting It On with James and Heather. I'm Heather Dawn.
And I'm James Gay, giving you the best in health, love, and relationship advice.
Ask us your questions by calling us at 310-845-6095.
Or you can email us at hosts@thejamesandheathershow.com.
Let's go get it on.
Let's do it.
James.
Heather, we got a fun topic today we can certainly both relate to, huh?
Commitment phobic man that you are. I know it.
I'm not the phobic one, but I have certainly had a long history of being interested in people who were emotionally unavailable.
What? You?
I know.
Your cute little dimples.
But
those cute little therapy glasses.
Thankfully, I grew out of that one, but it was a pain. Oh my gosh, right? This is a tough one.
Oh man. I mean, again, you know, you and I sort of chuckle about, you know, post-traumatic painful experiences because
right.
we have the luxury of laughing now, but
yeah.
correct. You know, I have certainly, I dated so many emotionally unavailable people that left me so brokenhearted.
Mm.
And my dad was, you know, like you're one of my confidants. My dad was one of, and still is one of my confidants. And so he literally put up Dr. Judith Orloff's list, which we'll get into soon.
Yeah.
He stuck it up on the refrigerator.
Here's
in
a
my
reminder,
house,
Heather.
And like emailed it to me saying, you know, Heather, I see the pattern.
Mm.
You know, we all see the pattern. You see the pattern. This is just a little reminder. So he printed up an actual list.
Thanks, Dad.
For me to keep reading so that I stop because he was sick of yeah. seeing me crying and being sad all the time for making
right.
stupid choices.
Well, it takes whatever it needs to take, doesn't it? I mean,
I
we really
that.
Do sometimes need to sort of like wake up
yep.
to our patterns, to what's going on, to seeing it when it's present in front of us.
Correct.
Yeah. So let's get into it. What,
yeah.
what do we mean by
yeah.
emotionally unavailable? Right?
And then, you know, oftentimes a lot of people are good at finger pointing. But I think, you know, remember, we all have a personal bias that we work with. And so if you find yourself constantly in this cycle of breaking up and dating, and as my dad saw, sort of heartbroken more often than you'd like to be,
yeah.
you need to start asking yourself, one, are you, you know, dating emotionally unavailable people or are you an emotionally unavailable person?
Good questions.
You know,
a little self-reflection there.
Yes. I think, you know, if you're asking yourself, like, what is an emotionally unavailable person, it's a person who in a relationship seeks distance more than they seek intimacy.
Right. And that can be physical distance with not spending much time together, being away a lot. It can be sort of emotional disconnection and being distracted by other things in their lives.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And I mean,
and
totally uncomfortable about talking about feelings or the relationship.
Right.
And as James was saying, you know, someone who is emotionally unavailable person will use tools to keep distancing.
Yeah.
Anger, criticisms, activity. Oh, I'm busy all the time. You know,
distraction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anything not to sink deep with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, you know, some things to start to see if you're
right.
wondering, are you an emotionally unavailable person or is someone that you're dating an emotionally unavailable person? These are
right.
some of the tools and some of the things that start to happen.
Yeah. And I, you know, I think it's also important to recognize here too that there is this dynamic in most relationships at some point or another where there's this distancer versus pursuer, right? And sometimes that switches up, but basically it's where one partner is creating a little bit of space, wants a little bit more independence or autonomy, and the other partner who wants more connection and relatability, right? So it's not like any of those particular dynamics is in and of itself a deal breaker necessarily. What we're talking about is a bit further of an extreme than that sort of, you know, typical dynamic.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and I think at least from my perspective, you know, I'm coming more from the dating aspect.
Mm.
You know, having been in many long-term monogamous relationships and
yeah.
Unmarried, boo-hoo-hoo.
Oh.
does not make me happy or proud to talk about that, by the way.
Oh.
You know, you have to start to look at these things. You know, for me, as I was, you know, my dad was sort of trying to, you know, gear me on, I was
right.
definitely caught up in a cycle of, you know, dating long-term, you know, over 5 years in relationships
right.
and then, you know, constantly trying. I found myself putting on like parlor tricks and pony tricks, you know, metaphorically speaking,
right,
to try to get emotional responses. You know, not in dysfunctional ways. I'd had too much therapy for that, but I did see myself going above and beyond energetically, emotionally, you know, going out of my way, and there was no reciprocity,
right,
or very little.
Well, and you and I, Heather, we're in the helping profession, right?
Yeah.
And so oftentimes the tool that we use the most is empathy. Being able to sort of really understand someone's experience, right? Which is a great tool, but it's also an occupational hazard when it comes to our personal relationship. So like you, I mean, I found myself for, you know, most of my 20s into my 30s, you know, being attracted to people who were just not available for the kind of emotional depth and intimacy that... that I kind of do for a living. I'm intimate for a living as a therapist, right? And I, you know, have a certain amount of desire and need for that kind of emotional depth. But I was choosing people time and time again that were not available for that kind of relationship. So it's important to recognize those things within ourselves so that we can, you know, learn to change them. That's what we're having this podcast.
Yeah, and if you find that you're in a cycle of dating someone who's emotionally unavailable, again, you know, much like myself, you'll find yourself dating and breaking up, never really getting your intimacy needs met, and then often feeling alone, depressed, unimportant, or rejected.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, you keep sort of finding yourself in this sort of hopeless, alone, depressed, or sad state because you were constantly or in a relationship with someone who was emotionally unavailable. And by the way, I've been on the flip side of that.
Yeah.
Except I know when I'm being emotionally unavailable. And, you know, I think that that's a very important distinction because we're not talking about healthy levels of anything. Healthy,
right.
There are healthy levels of distancing. Mm-hmm. There's healthy levels of intimacy. There's healthy levels of being emotionally unavailable. Mm-hmm. For example, when you're so stressed out that you just don't have anything left to give to anyone but yourself.
Sure. When that energy needs to be going into grieving the loss of a family member, when it needs to be going into
work stress,
work-related types of activities, right? We might not have a certain amount of emotional bandwidth, and it's okay for those moments in time, as long as they're not consistently so throughout the course of our life in a way that doesn't
leaves
allow
you
us
alone.
Yeah, it doesn't allow us to be in relationships,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And it's important to be upfront about that with the people in our lives, right?
Correct. And I, you know, I was after my breakup that I had back in 2015, which was extremely painful for me. You know, I met this really amazing guy, and he was so lovely, and I kept thinking, you know, because it was just a couple of months after the breakup, and I thought, you know, why couldn't I find someone that this was kind? And here he was right in front of me, and so my head was going, well, he is here, and he is this kind. But intellectually, I was there, and I had to say, look, emotionally, I'm going to need some time to get to your level of gentleness and kindness and amazingness. And, you know, I was partially beating myself up for that relationship because I eventually had to put it to quits because I was feeling so guilty because I knew that the person I was dating was suffering. I mean, he was expressing it. And
sure,
I said,
sure.
Look, I don't have the bandwidth to handle your suffering on top of my suffering.
Right.
I'm still trying to get through my suffering.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, ultimately he wound up with a really amazing, great woman and I'm friends with him. But, you know, there was part where I felt like, gosh, you know, why couldn't I heal quicker? And why couldn't my heart get over it quicker? And
we have to go at the pace
that
we are meant to go on.
And
it's not like something you can speed up.
And
right?
I communicated as clearly as I could.
Sure.
But I could also very much respect what he was ready for and what his needs were at that moment.
Different. You guys were in different places at different times.
Totally.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, we revisited like a year later.
Yeah.
And I was now clear-headed and ready, and he was broken up with someone, and I was now ready, and he was just like, you know, I might be having second thoughts. And then it made me realize that I made a good decision.
Oh, interesting.
Because I didn't reach out to him that second time. He had reached out to me a year later. Hey, what are you doing? And I thought, wow.
Yeah.
I was just like, man, I feel like maybe I escaped a bullet because if he could move in and out of something that quickly, then maybe, you know, the show that I was being seen wasn't really the person. But either which way, we're friends and it was good. But, you know, those happen. It does help when you know that you're emotionally unavailable and can communicate it.
Yeah, especially, again, if it's a moment in time, if it's a sort of an ongoing, you know, there could be other things that need to be attended to. The other thing with this, too, is that oftentimes sometimes if someone says, oh, you know, I just had a recent relationship breakup, or I have a lot of work stuff that's taking priority, or, you know, in some way conveys that they're not available. For some people, a lot of people, they see it as a challenge, right? If I can only just convince them, or I'll be the one person to make it change. And again, there can be this desire that if I can get them to this person who's stating that they're unavailable to be available and to love me and be with me, that kind of reward is very intense. The hope for reward that you can change someone like that is part of what drives this for many, many people.
Yeah. Which, you know, gets us to talking like what drives you, what you were just saying, like when you sit there and you go, okay, I'm an emotionally unavailable person, dater or doer, and I'm in this cycle for way too long that I'm comfortable to discuss openly. Like you find yourself in that stage in your life, you know, you need to start to discover, as James was saying, what drives you? Like what drives you to constantly create space and distance? What drives you to keep dating the same person who's never going to meet your intimacy needs? And you have to start getting a professional like James or myself or a friend or a good self-help book or a support group.
Well, let's lay a little foundation here too, which is, you know, there's this thing called secondary gains.
Oh yeah.
And it's basically, you know, when consciously we're experiencing pain and we're driven evolutionarily, you know, to avoid pain, right? To avoid danger, to be safe. And yet we still continue to repeat these patterns where we're in dangerous and painful situations. Consciously, we're like, I don't want to do this anymore. So why do we keep doing it? It's oftentimes because there's an unconscious drive, something that we're not aware of, something that we're getting by being in these kinds of instances. So this is what we're talking about by secondary gain and looking more deeper and mindfully into why we do what we do.
Exactly. And so you're discovering what drives you. You look at your traumas, you know, how you were raised by your caretakers, you know, what kind of traumas were there that maybe were you smothered and so you just need to distance, or was nobody ever there to fulfill your emotional needs when you were vulnerable and so you're constantly seeking it and coming up against the so-and-so emotional unavailable parent, except now you're dating them.
Right.
You know.
That's a fun one.
I know. Late to the game, like sometimes people are so focused on work. You know, a woman wakes up one day, she's 45, 46, and she's like, shoot, my biological clock. Yeah. And she'll just take anything because she wants to have that family.
Right.
And not through adoption, she wants to have it biologically. And so sometimes there's just plain old late to the game kind of fear that's
willing to kind of put up with second or third best because there's a felt sense of immediacy there. So another thing is that we oftentimes, you know, the thrill of the chase can be so potent, so, intense that we can be sort of driven for that level of intensity. You know, if we get little bites, little attention, little eye contact, and we feel satiated by these scraps from the table, you know, this crumb love, it can sometimes feel so incredibly rewarding and intense, even if it's very inconsistent and unpredictable.
Yep. And that's when we start mistaking intensity for intimacy.
Right.
Intimacy drives long-term relationships. Intensity drives hookups.
Good. I like that. A nice
it's
way to put
truth.
It, Heather.
It's the truth. Sometimes we get caught up in wound bonding, which gets back to the sort of trauma patterns that we were talking about. You're playing out, or as you would say, repetition compulsion.
Right.
Playing out all these, dramas. Yeah. Projection.
Yeah, right. Sometimes it's like, you know, we're actually the unavailable person, but we're projecting that onto someone else and ridiculing them for it because it's easier to do that than to look at our own availability, right?
Yep. The fear of being alone, right, will sometimes make you make very bad choices.
Sure.
I've seen that a lot. You know, you get, when he was talking about secondary gains, you know, it's like when you were a kid and got sick and you were lucky enough to have good caretakers that cared for you. You know, you got all this validation for being sick. We love you, Tommy. It's so good. You know, sometimes you get that from your social group. Oh, you poor thing, you broke up again.
Right. There's a lot of reinforcement and validation that comes with being the victim.
Again, secondary gain.
Yeah, it's sort of like, if you're hearing from everyone else in the situation that you're worthy, that you deserve better, you know, that in and of itself can feel really, really good and really, really validating, even if the person you're with is, you know, acting otherwise.
So again, you know, you discover that you're an emotionally unavailable person, meaning you prefer distance over intimacy in your relationships, you know, or you're constantly in a cycle of dating and breaking up where you're feeling alone, you know, unimportant, rejected. You start to discover now, well, what's driving you? Because you've what? You've suffered enough, right? Suffering is terrible, but it's a great motivator for change.
Absolutely, it
right?
is.
So you now have suffered enough where you said, man, I think I've had enough suffering, and you start to develop the discipline. And part of that discipline is discovering what drives you to distance or to keep dating unavailable people.
Right. Increasing that awareness is oftentimes the first step for a lot of things, right? It's insight alone doesn't necessarily change it all the time, but it can empower us to see what's going on, to recognize our patterns, and to figure out different ways of responding and behaving and self-soothing in the process.
Insight alone will not change the behavior. I want to actually go one step further with what you just said. Cognitive awareness, insight, the, well, I know this, the discovery of what drives you will not change you.
Yeah.
The discipline, once you've discovered to make sure that you don't repeat the behavior is what will change you.
Yeah, and that is not an easy process.
No,
there's no easy fix.
Really easy to say.
You have to be uncomfortable for periods of time, right? Where you're like, okay, I really want to call this person, but I know it's really bad for me. And so you hang out with friends, you call someone else, you distract yourself, you do anything but call that person. And it's not going to be easy, and it's not fun a lot of the time. But it actually can become over time, you know, something that shifts and changes and becomes easier, if not, you know, we're better capable to navigate those kinds of situations.
And so, you know, there are some signs that are pretty clear if you're dating someone who's emotionally unavailable. And, you know, sometimes the big biggies are always, I just had a friend who was you know, dating a woman who was getting out of her current married relationship. And, you know, on and on and on, he was anxious and hyper and all over and unsettled. And I was like, this person is emotionally unavailable. You know, I wasn't sitting there as a judge and jury. I'm sitting here looking at the clear emotional discomfort my friend was in. And I said, you are with someone who is emotionally unavailable, which is a clear sign, everybody. You know, if this person is married, getting out of a marriage, getting out of a long-term relationship, dealing with a recent breakup, I've got a newsflash. I don't care what they tell you. They are not emotionally available.
Right. And, you know, I'll give one caveat to that, which is if it's been a multi-month, multi-year process and they're finally going through the end stages, you know, there might have been some sort of preparation and preparation for you know, exiting the relationship, especially if it's sort of a conscious coupling and caring sort of exit strategy. But again, those are more rare, and it's important to pay attention and listen to when people say, you know, and to observe when and how they're using their emotional bandwidth, right? Are they invested in other kinds of people and activities to the extent that they're not as available as you need them to be?
Exactly. So, you know, some of the signs are that you're with an emotionally unavailable person or you're interested in one. They're literally not available. They are married. They are still in a relationship. Whatever's going on, even though they say they're getting out, they're not available. Move on. They can't commit. You know, you've been together X amount of time. You want a commitment. No. Okay, they're not available. Move on. Gas and brake. Come go, come go, come go, come go. Not available.
Right. It can feel like you're going a little crazy because you're getting told one thing.
Oh, and the mixed messages.
Yeah, the mixed messages just are like torture.
I got to pull out my like decoder ring.
Right.
So what, you want me to move in, but you don't want me to move in? I mean, I knew, I had a client, this poor woman that he did this to, literally had movers, packed up her stuff in boxes, and changed his mind.
Yeah.
The day, like, the movers were coming.
Right, got cold feet and...
Totally. I mean, I'm not sure what I would have done in that situation. I probably would have beaten him, but I was just like... I was just like, could you imagine? But I can't help to think that she couldn't... How did she not see these signs?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's that, oh, the sneakiness and the disappearing acts. Those are some other signs. People who constantly want to keep everything at a distance. Mm-hmm. Texts, calls, phones, never seeing you, never getting invited to meet their intimate friends and family.
And again, the more obvious ones are the ones that are really, really super self-absorbed and require a tremendous amount of your energy, your emotional availability, but are unable to reciprocate in kind.
Exactly. So those are some of the signs mm-hmm. of people who are emotionally unavailable. And, you know, how do we avoid this type of dead-end dating or, mm-hmm. you know, deluding ourselves? And I want to get back to something James and I were talking about earlier, which is to remember we see what we want to see.
Right.
We all have a bias. We mm-hmm. all have a personal bias. Mm-hmm. Every single person that you talk to, yourself included, your family, and all the people that you love and support, everybody has a personal bias.
Especially in the beginning of relationships where we're in the honeymoon phase or we're projecting everything that we want in the other, which is the glue of relationships, long-term relationships oftentimes that people can kind of reminisce and go back to. And yet, if we're in it so much that we have such thick blinders on that we're not seeing all the red flags that maybe our friends are seeing, then we need to slow down, take a breath, check in with our body, our intuition, and again, really mindfully, compassionately observe what's happening.
Exactly.
Listen and observe, right?
Exactly. Try to see things as they are. Mindfulness is a great tool to help you avoid these sort of dead-end relationship scenarios if you're looking to be in an emotionally intimate relationship, right? That's mm-hmm. important. We often get caught up in these cycles and we start saying, well, I don't want to be involved with another unavailable person. Flip that around. Mm-hmm. I want to be involved.
Yeah.
In a deeply intimate relationship. Flip it around, make it a positive. Understand what you're looking for, not what you're not looking for.
Right.
You know, do things like getting the person's history. Mm-hmm. Again, you're not like grilling somebody, but in your flirtations and stuff, mm-hmm. you know, what are their dating patterns like? If they're constantly talking about how they were wronged by every single person they dated, mm-hmm. Red flag.
Right. Or if they, again, admit to being not available for, you know, a relationship, believe them. Yeah, exactly.
Yep. You know, and then you have choice, which is where you want to be. You know, if you're always coming last, mm-hmm. you know, that's another thing to start to notice. So try to stay mindful, try to stay aware, and, you know, have your James in your life. You know, people like my Heather. Right? you know, people you can bounce things off of and say, you know, I'm not sure because I know I'm biased or these are what my sabotaging patterns are and I know what it is I do want. Can I bounce these things off of you?
Right.
What do you hear?
Yeah.
And retain some things and bounce it off. Mm-hmm. You know, have your life coaches, your therapists, your close friends or family that you can bounce these things off with if you've mm-hmm. been caught, especially if you've been caught in a pattern that's just causing more suffering than it is joy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, remember not to, you know, pedestal people and, you know, that you're not there to fix and repair people. And that if your relationship fails, it doesn't mean you're a failure.
Exactly. If you're finding yourself in a relationship like this, you know, being critical and judgmental of yourself is not going to help. It's actually going to just deepen the wound. What we really need in times like this is our own love, care, compassion. You know, that that doesn't mean permission to just continue to, you know, be victims. Compassion actually is something that allows us to recognize what's going on in a caring way so that we can take responsibility and get out of this cyclical pattern.
Correct. So all of this sounds real easy, but it's not. It's going to take some work on your part. Breaking patterns, especially ones that sabotage our happiness, are not easy to break, but they're extremely possible. It does happen. You got to stay strong. You're going to falter a couple of times while you're trying to do it. I know I have.
Yeah.
But, you know, love is worth it.
It sure is. So if you want to hear more about love and relationships, including health, you can go to our website, which is www.thejamesandheathershow.com.
And you can find us on Twitter at James Heather SHO, James Heather Show, and on Facebook.
All right. And we'd love to hear from you. Love to hear from you. So email us at hosts@thejamesandheathershow.com.
And we have a number, 310-845-6095, if you want to leave us questions.
Exactly. We'd love to hear from you.